Hello, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, October 9th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
You're not too smart, are you?
I like that in a man.
Why, thanks. So, coming up is a brand spanking new edition of the Sex Education Show. By now, I'm sure you know that this is the series that takes a look at the world of fetish sex and kink and alternative lifestyles, and we do so with remarkably talented people from all over the freaking world, don't you know? My guest today is one such person. Author, educator, counselor, nurse, hypnotherapist, and oh-so-amazing Kathy Labriola is in the house. Kathy has been writing and teaching and presenting on the topic of open relationships for decades. She has a brand new book out that deals with one of the biggest bugaboos for the non-monogamy set, as well as all of you monogamous folks out there. And that is jealousy. You can be sure that we will be talking about this timely topic and so much more. So you're not going to want to miss this, sex fans.
You're very generous. You're kind to strangers and children. And when you stand in the snow, you look like an angel.
Aw, thanks, I guess. You'll find lots of information about Kathy on her fantastic website, cleverly named KathyLabriola.com. It's filled with videos and articles and interviews, and her books are available on there too. Look for a link to her site in today's podcast posting. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this pervy series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun. And, I might add, easy. Yes, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why.
I think you're the most attractive of all my parents' friends. I mean that.
Well, that's good to know. But you know what? You're interrupting my little advertisement here. So thanks to the Dr. Dick Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. And remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these shows. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Kathy, and thank you for dropping by DrDickSexAdvice.com. It's a pleasure to have you here for this sex education show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Good, good, good. So now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the really nice people?
Well, I would love to. I'm sure you have lots of really wonderful people listening to your podcast.
Right.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm very excited to be able to get a chance to talk with you today.
Good, good, good. So let's see where to begin. As I recall, a couple of months ago, your publisher, Janet Hardy, over at Greenery Press, offered to send me a copy of your new book, The Jealousy Workbook, Exercises and Insights for Managing Open Relationships. My latest book, The Gospel of Kink, had just been published, and I immediately recognized that you and I were doing a lot of the same things. So I jumped at the chance to get a copy of your book, and I'm so delighted that I did, because, darling, you do such good work.
Oh, thank you. You just sure know how to make a girl feel special.
And it's only beginning, don't you know?
So,
both of our books are workbooks. How about if I tell you why I chose that format, if you tell me why you chose it? You go first.
Go for it. Oh, you want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I wrote a book 3 years ago called Love in Abundance, A Counselor's Advice on Open Relationships. And that book has a large section, about a third of the book, is about jealousy. And the thing that I got the most responses and feedback to from people that read the book was that they loved the jealousy section and that they especially loved the techniques and exercises that were specifically geared towards helping them manage jealousy. So people started asking me when would I write a book on just jealousy and on, you know, like a workbook that they could do more of these exercises. So that was by popular demand. I decided to do the workbook format. And whenever I do classes and workshops, that is the thing that gets the biggest aha moment from people saying, oh my God, that was so helpful, and I was in a crisis, and that really helped me doing those jealousy exercises and using those techniques.
The reason that I chose the workbook format was because I do this workshop called The Gospel of Kink, basically, and I wanted to be able to offer this to a much wider audience than I could possibly do personally, and so I figured out the best way to do that is to do it by putting the workshop in book form, and so that's why I chose that format.
Uh-huh.
So
that it gives more people the opportunity to
utilize
it that might never be able to come to one of your workshops.
Right, exactly.
You can't be gallivanting around the world every day doing these things.
God knows I would like to, but
sure.
There you have it.
Intrude.
Okay. There are several good books in the marketplace on the topic of dealing with and overcoming jealousy, but your book is different from all the others in that it is full of thought-provoking exercises, as you just pointed out, that help the reader take stock of his or her emotional responses to difficult triggers in their relationships. As you said, that it was planned on your part, mm-hmm. right? Yes?
Yes, yes. Well, and the other thing is that my experience when I see clients who are having an acute jealousy episode, they're in a state of usually intense anxiety,
right.
And doing some kind of cognitive behavioral thing like writing and reading and coming up with plans and strategies is very helpful to them,
right.
Because they're kind of paralyzed with
right.
for being freaked out at that moment.
Right. Good point. So, I know that you wrote the book for folks in open relationships, but I think it's just as applicable to those who are in sexually exclusive or monogamous relationships. Do you agree?
You know, I think it can be useful
good.
To them.
Good.
I don't think it would be likely to be as useful because
uh-huh.
some of the exercises are specifically right. about jealousy related to your partner having an outside
right.
sexual relationship.
Right.
But as I mentioned in the book, there we have jealousy in every realm of our lives, not just the romantic realm.
Right.
And
right.
There are a couple of exercises that are about looking at jealousy in other arenas, whether it's everything from sibling rivalry when you're a child
right.
to any kind of competition or jealousy with your peers in school or with
right.
your colleagues as a professional or any of those things, we seem to handle it better when it's not in the romantic realm.
Yeah.
And so some of the exercises are geared toward helping people figure out how can you translate or transfer those skills that you use so well to manage jealousy in the workplace or in your family,
mm-hmm.
how can you take that successful strategy and apply it to a romantic jealousy situation?
Right.
Again, whether it's monogamous or polyamorous
right,
relationship.
Right. Are you using jealousy and envy interchangeably?
No. In fact, there's a chapter in the book about the difference between envy, coveting,
right.
and jealousy.
Right.
And envy is primarily when you see someone who either you admire or someone who has something that you want, whether
mm-hmm.
it's a thing like a job or whether
right.
it's a a quality or a skill, and you want some of that same thing
right.
that they have.
Right.
Whereas jealousy is more about feeling like there's a competition
right.
where someone's going to win
right.
and someone's going to lose.
Oh,
there's
right.
not enough to go around.
Right.
Whereas if you just look at someone and say, wow, they have a great job doing exactly what I want to do, you can go out and find a job like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
It's not that you have to take that job away from them to get it.
Right.
So jealousy, it's more there's a competition and you feel convinced that
right.
you're not going to get that thing because someone else is going to win out
right.
over you.
Right. That's a really curious kind of thing. And to go back to something you said just a few moments ago, that a lot of us have learned jealousy sorts of things early on in our life. We
mm-hmm.
learned to be jealous early on. And that, I'm thinking, fuels jealousy kinds of things as adults.
Yes, I think that's true. We learn those behaviors. We learn to believe in a scarcity economy in every arena of
mm-hmm.
our lives.
Interesting.
And that
fuels
jealousy.
Right.
There's not enough to go around, whether
right.
it's love or money or jobs or any other things.
Yeah, right.
And so we translate that as adults in our romantic relationships
right.
to feel that if someone else gets even a tiny bit of my partner's time, attention, love, or sex, I'm going to get less or I'm not going to get anything.
Right.
And that it's not a zero-sum game, but we believe it is,
yes.
and that makes us intensely jealous.
Right. And not only do you provide your readers with a multitude of exercises, you give examples of what kind of things the exercise might bring up for your readers, which I think was one of the more helpful things as I was going through your book. I like that a lot. Is that kind of stuff that you do in workshops as well?
Yes, I find that it's really helpful to use examples because as a counselor, I may be talking about concepts that don't make sense
right.
to people
right.
Because I see these situations all, you know, every day with my clients. I sometimes can use a shorthand and not realize that the client or the person in the workshop may not understand it, or the reader in this case. So I think it's useful to say, okay, well, this is a particular example, or here's three examples of how this might manifest.
Right. I mean, I find that in my practice too, that, you know, sometimes we use vocabulary that I'm talking to my client's talking to me, and we're using a lot of the same vocabulary, but it dawns on me at some point where, you know what, we're not talking about the same thing at all.
They mean something else
right.
altogether.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's true.
Good.
I also think examples can be helpful in normalizing a person's
right.
feelings and experience, especially because I see so many people who are very new to open relationships. They're having all kinds of kind of primal, intense emotions and feelings and experiences that they don't understand.
Right.
So giving examples helps them see, well, you know, a lot of people have similar experience to me. I'm not insane, or this is not such a bizarre reaction that
yeah.
I'm having.
Yeah.
You know, very reassuring.
You want to know something else that I really like about your book? It's not preachy.
You
kindly spare your readers a lot of the sanctimonious malarkey that often mucks up otherwise good self-help books. Were you conscious of this when you were putting it together?
Yes, because I really despise preachiness, and I really don't think anyone is converted to the fold by,
yeah.
you know, hearing someone whining on and on and sounding self-righteous.
Yes.
I don't think that's very effective,
right.
Nor is it pleasant.
Right.
So I also feel that there's not really a right or wrong about all this. It's really about what will work in your particular relationship
right.
with the constellation of people and experiences that are in that relationship circle.
Right.
And I've seen so many people in polyamorous or open relationships who are sort of fundamentalists in that they think there's only one true way to do polyamory.
Yeah. Right.
And there's a a thousand ways to do open relationships, right. And they depend on the personalities and the specific set of needs that right. each person at each relationship in that constellation has.
Right. So do you suggest that the jealous person work with his or her partners in resolving the jealousy, or is this best an exercise done by the jealous person alone?
Most of the time, the jealous person can get the most benefit by working on their own.
I see. Uh-huh.
But even before working on their jealousy, I try to help the person clarify whether an open relationship is right for them or
right.
not.
Yeah.
Because sometimes jealousy is more of a screen that's masking the fact that they really don't want to be in this type of relationship, and it's not very
right.
healthy for
right.
them for any
right.
number of reasons.
Right.
So that's important to clarify, because oftentimes the partner who's not jealous, the partner who's having an outside relationship, so they don't have anything to be jealous about, they're the ones having all
right.
the fun, they try to send their partner to therapy
right.
saying, you're the identified patient
right.
because you're jealous, so go to therapy and
right.
fix that.
Right.
And then often it will come out that either they do not want to be in this type of relationship at all, or it will come out that their partner is mistreating them in some
right.
fundamental ways, and they need to set boundaries around
yeah.
that rather than fix their jealousy.
Right.
They're responding in a way that any normal, reasonable person would
right.
because their partner is not treating them respectfully or with transparency and giving them the information they need.
Right. So that's a good segue into my next question, and that I see in my practice oftentimes couples who are dealing with jealousy, but the jealousy is one-sided. One partner is jealous as all get out, and the other
mm-hmm.
one isn't. And interestingly enough, the partner that is jealous often has the perception that if his partner isn't jealous, that means that she isn't as deeply involved in the relationship as he is. It's like,
mm-hmm.
well, I can't possibly mean as much to her as she means to me because she's not jealous like me.
Mm-hmm.
So what does one do with one-sided jealousy?
Well, oftentimes that is not really the reason. Often, if one person is not jealous, it can be because their partner is quite skilled at making them feel loved, special, and safe.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that that person is not feeling jealous may, and often is, a function of the fact that their partner is behaving very well and is doing right by them
right.
in the situation.
Right.
So oftentimes the person who's jealous is being told that there's something pathological about them because they're jealous,
right.
when in fact their partner may not be making them feel safe and loved in a way that they really need.
Right. Or as
and that
as
may be why it's one-sided.
Right,
or
right.
frequently it's one-sided because only one person has an outside relationship and the other doesn't.
Right. But also what you said earlier about, you know, some people are socialized into thinking or having this mindset that, you know, gee, this is all, this economy, this love economy is going,
mm-hmm.
going
scarcity
to be...
Scarcity economy.
Exactly, scarcity. And the other person was socialized differently or was
mm-hmm.
brought up differently. And only these things only come out, you know, I mean, and I see this, you know, in sexually exclusive and monogamous relationships that where one partner is, you know, pretty okay, but everything that the other partner does is a threat. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, the sky is falling. So that's interesting.
I often find that people have a lot of insecurities because, I mean, it makes sense if they were raised in a very insecure family situation
right.
where they weren't loved or where the family broke up and there was, you know, not any kind of stable
right.
Parenting, or where there was a lot of scarcity in terms of being given love and affection by the parents, or where there was abuse, or where there was a situation where the where there was deprivation in terms of money and resources. That's a person that's going to grow up to be very insecure, naturally, and to not feel safe in their attachment to the partner. So if they happen to have a partner who had a very loving childhood, a wonderful, you know, idyllic childhood, and was deeply
great
loved,
abundance of all kinds of
stuff. They have every reason to feel safe and loved in that relationship, and to feel very secure.
Interesting, really. So let's talk about you for a bit. You bring an amazingly interesting perspective to this endeavor. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I was a nurse for 20 years, and I worked in the intensive care unit. For most of those years, I also worked with people with AIDS for a number of years. But I worked in a clinical research office working on experimental drugs as a nurse for several years. And then I, for the past 20 years, I've been in private practice doing counseling and hypnotherapy.
Wow.
And because of my nursing background, I work with a certain percentage of clients who are having medical issues, HIV, cancer, chronic illness, and chronic pain. I work with a lot of heroin addicts and methamphetamine addicts, as well as a big portion of my clients are dealing with relational issues, either queer-related issues or trans issues, or often BDSM and polyamory open relationship issues coming up for them, or often all of the above.
Right. Very cool. Very cool.
So oftentimes people have seen other therapists who have unfortunately traumatized them in some way by pathologizing their BDSM lifestyle, or by pathologizing the polyamory, or at least here in the Bay Area, we rarely see people being traumatized by their therapists over their LGBT orientation, at least we're beyond that. But the BDSM and the poly stuff, I can't tell you how much damage I have to undo.
Oh, it's true. Me too.
I'm sure you have to do the same every day.
Yikes. It really is. So I mean, the horror stories.
Yeah, I really encourage people to interview potential therapists ruthlessly and make sure that there's not a sliver of bias there about their alternative relationship orientation. I don't encourage people to go to therapists that proselytize for polyamory either, because not everybody is polyamorous, and I don't think it should be something a therapist should push you in either direction.
Right. So let's turn our attention to the topic at hand, open relationships. Generally speaking, at least from my point of view, there are at least three major expressions of non-monogamy, polygamy, swinging, and polyamory. Are there others that you can think of?
You know, I would put swinging in the open relationship polyamory fold. I mean, I use...
Okay.
I use ethical non-monogamy, open relationship, polyamory. I use those three terms interchangeably.
I see. Good, good, good.
Because they have lost all meaning because everyone defines them differently.
Oh, it's true.
So, and you can hear people arguing about, well, this is what polyamory is, but this is what open relationships is, and this is totally different, and this is ethical non-monogamy. But, you know, they're all the same. I mean, they all have the same basic tenets, which are consensual and honest multi-partner relationships.
Right.
And I put swinging in the same, under the same banner. I don't think swinging is any different than polyamory. It's just a particular type of open
That's
relationship.
Very cool.
But within that there are many different models. Swinging I see as one model.
Right.
And a group marriage is another model.
Right.
The primary-secondary model is another model of the primary couple and the then outside relationship.
The satellites.
Secondary.
Right. Yeah.
And there's all different models, and you have to find the one that's right for you and parts that are compatible with that model. I see a lot of people get in a lot of trouble by picking the wrong partners who are in a different model altogether than they are.
So it's really not advantageous for somebody even to come out as, let's say, I'm polyamorous, without following up with like a definition. You know, this is how I see it, or this is how it plays itself out in my life, and how does it play itself out in your life, for example?
I think it's about the same as someone saying, I'm into BDSM. I mean, that
right.
doesn't tell you anything.
Exactly.
It tells you nothing about whether they're remotely within your constellation of what could work for you.
It's so true. It's so true. So always the follow-up, and this is how I do it, and this is how I live it out, or this is how I play, or whatever, is as important as
coming. This is what I'm available for.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So that's as necessary as, like the coming out process of, self-identifying as, I'm into open relationships, or, I'm into polyamory, or whatever. Interesting.
Mm-hmm, well, it's similar to, you've probably heard Dan Savage describe how when two men decide to have sex, that's just the beginning of the negotiation. Because they're going to decide who's wants to do what and whether they actually have enough compatibility to want to have sex.
Right.
It's the same with people who are in open relationships. When they decide, well, I'm interested in you. That's just the beginning of the discussion on what actually is possible and whether it really is going to make both people happy.
Right. Historically speaking, monogamy is a relative newcomer to the way human relationships develop, yet it has become the norm. What's up with that, do you suppose?
Well, I see it from a feminist perspective, that monogamy was primarily invented to protect men's property rights
right.
by allowing them to enslave women and force them into monogamy so they could be certain of the paternity of their children who would inherit
right.
their property. And all of that is dependent on the whole concept of private property,
mm-hmm.
which is a concept that was not known thousands of years ago. I mean, that's a concept that is only consistent with certain types of political governments and political structures.
Right.
If you don't have private property, there's no reason to ensure paternity, and there's no reason to enslave women.
I'm all for that, don't you know?
Uh-huh.
So would you say then, or is this too big of a leap, that polyamory is more egalitarian in terms of the sexes than monogamy often is?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I would say that when women have political power and when women have economic power in their own lives, then they can choose what type of relationship they want to be in,
right.
whether that's monogamous or polyamorous.
Right.
But
not just because it is polyamory. They have
right,
to have that innate sense of power and and economic security in order to make those decisions.
Absolutely. Women have to have power and control over their own lives to be able to demand monogamy if they want it and if
right.
that's what works for them. Or to demand sexual freedom and demand the freedom to have multiple relationships if that's what they want.
Right.
Because as you are very aware, almost all the cultures where polygamy is allowed, women are chattel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Women
that.
Have no political economic power, right. No control over the basic decisions of their lives.
Yes.
They're bought and sold like slaves. So women need that control over their lives in order to make a choice about whether they want to be in an open relationship or whether they want to be right. in a monogamous relationship. But having said that, I certainly believe that for women who choose a polyamorous lifestyle, they have much more freedom in their lives, much more personal control over their lives, because they're able to explore other relationships. They're not dependent on any one person to be that partner and spouse, whether they're gay, straight, bisexual, or anything
That's
else.
So true.
They're not dependent for love, affection, family, sex, support, any of that on one person.
Right. That is so.
And they really choose the relationship rather than be forced into it or feel stuck in it or trapped in it because of economics or
right.
because they don't have any other choices.
Right. It's curious to me how it all can be boiled down to economics and, you know, availability to information and education and stuff like that, which mm-hmm. so many places in the world, even here in our own country, that is not a prerogative of women. I'm looking at my clock and I see that our time is up for today. I have so many more questions to ask you. Any chance you could come back next week and talk with us some more?
I would love to. This is one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, yeah.
I could talk about it all day.
All righty then. Okay, before we go today, however, could you give us your website address? Walk us around a little bit. Tell us where we can buy your books.
Thank you. My website is www.kathylabriola.com, and it's KathyLabriola. And you can, if you want to go on my website, there are videos to watch of me giving talks on jealousy, if you're interested in that topic, which I'm assuming if you're listening to the show you are. There are also articles on there to read about jealousy, some excerpts from my book and some other articles I've written on jealousy. There are a couple of teleseminars that I've done with John Davidson that are
great.
On jealousy. And you can also order my books on the website, or you can order them from www.thestockroom.com.
Very
or from
cool.
Greenery Press.
Good. So I will have links to all of that stuff in today's podcast posting, by the way.
Thank you.
And one final question, are you a Facebook gal or a Twitter gal?
No, I'm a Luddite, and I just recently got a website for the first time, only because I was coerced into it by my publisher.
All right. Well, then, until next week, we'll let you go back to your cave and live there, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks, Kathy. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Bye now. Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my chat with Kathy Labriola and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I freaking worship you, man.
Thank you. Why is everyone being so nice to me today? Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself. Or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site, and remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these great shows. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.